Okay, we're recording.
Are we going? All right, well, I guess welcome everybody to our table discussion to talk about some of the questions that have arisen from our time together learning about Web 2.0. So the first question on our list tonight, and I don't know, do you guys all, do we need to introduce ourselves? Mm-hmm. Do we want to? Okay, yeah. So who would like to begin?
I'll start. I'm Julie Forbes, and I'm a teacher at Silver Creek High School.
I'm Pat Dehoney, and I'm a media clerk at Meade Middle School.
I'm Kathy Nunez. I'm a teacher at the Career Development Center, as well as Old Columbine High School, and the building tech rep.
And what do you teach? I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you want to say?
Information technology in CDC, and then computer literacy at Old Columbine.
Okay, and do you want to say?
I teach social studies.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm Kimberly Graham, and I'm the teen parenting coordinator at CDC and Old Columbine High School.
And I am Donna Salmeek. I'm an English teacher at Old Columbine High School. So, all right, the first question on our list to talk about is there one thing in particular that you might use in your classroom or something that you've already started to use just based on this class time together? Does anybody want us to jump in?
I'll jump in then. There is one thing, the evaluation assessment piece that I went and did my little presentation on. I liked that because I wanted to use to be able to put together some sort of web presence for my students, as well as blogs, and I didn't have a way of keeping track of them, expressing to them the importance of utilizing a blog, of writing in detail, etc. And with that assessment and evaluation video that was available, I learned how to, what it is I need to use and how I need to create the evaluation piece for my students. I haven't started using it because I've got these huge ideas in my mind as to how I want to create that web presence for my students. Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe just blog, but then there's so many other ways, other things that I can add to it, like wiki space, so students can go in and start writing up their troubleshooting ideas for troubleshooting computers or troubleshooting networks and so on, and they can go back and edit, and other students can add to that. So yeah, I just keep adding more ideas to my brain, and mm-hmm. I need to have time to sit down and actually create something that, like that myself before having my students, creating their own blogs and adding to wiki spaces, stuff like that.
Do you know who made the video about the evaluation assessment, or can you say a couple of the things that you're going to evaluate?
Conrad Goglowski, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. Can't remember. And trying to remember exactly what it was that he did as far as evaluation was concerned. But you would start off, and this piece was not, you start now and you'll end at the quarter. It's the blogging was throughout the whole year. Mm-hmm. And the way the students were evaluated were, at a certain point every couple of weeks, he would tell the students, give the students information or feedback as to how they were doing with their blog, what kind of detail they were including, and if they weren't including anything, then he would, kind of say, well, you've gotten this far, now what else can you do to improve that?
Or so it's more formative than,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, most definitely. And so that's what I liked about it, because I don't want my students to stop. Mm-hmm. So I would want them to continue on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Cool. Anybody else want to jump in around new things that you're using or plan to start using?
One thing that I want to do next year, because I teach one psychology class and it's just one semester long, so it'd be very doable. Plus, I'd be able to work out kinks first semester, make it better second semester, is something either a blog or a scribe post, but the idea being there's so many cool little nugget things that they learn every day in psychology or every other day, so that if a student was assigned a class period and they had to put onto the scribe post what we did during that class period, and then find something else from the internet, because there's so many cool websites and YouTube videos and all that kind of stuff that would enhance what we learned that day, that if I added that to it, where they had to not only talk about what we did in class so that, you know, it's the whole if you miss class, you can just go to the scribe post or whatever and find out what you missed. But then there's also like a cool thing that would get kids to be like, oh, I want to see what his scribe post was, because they have to add something, whether it's a video or a cool website that's got optical illusions on it or whatever it is that we're doing. So that's something that I want to do, because that to me is really doable. It's just one class, one semester. I can make it better for second semester. So that's something that I'd like to do. And I like the scribe post idea, because I'd like it to be, I mean, there's, you know, 40 some classes in a semester, so it'd be each kid would probably do this once or twice. So it seems really doable for them, and it's not something where they're like, oh, I got to do this again, or, you know, that it would start to feel repetitive, I guess.
I'm excited about that one, too. I don't mean to interrupt, but the scribe post is probably the biggest thing, one of the two or three things that I'm like, that for sure I want to try.
The other thing is, because it's psychology, it's a senior class, and attendance can be an issue. And so the whole idea that they would go to this as their, what do we do in class that day, I really like that idea, too, for that class in particular.
But I like what you said about having them add to it then, too, because there's so many other things that they find out there that I'm like, I don't have all that time to kill. You guys are teenagers. I know you're out there exploring more than I am, I think, often. So it's a cool idea.
And then if they find something first semester, like a really cool video or whatever, a website, I can take it and use it second semester and just add it to my own lesson plans. So hopefully that would work.
Nice. Anybody else want to share?
I'm just going to make one comment about what we've already started, and it's kind of what I just said in there after watching Julia's presentation on the virtual campus. One of our teachers at Mead Middle School decided that she was going to do sort of the same kind of forum with her students. So we uploaded, you know, 55 students in the eighth grade who worked on the Missouri Compromise, and they each took a different role. And to see their excitement to go into the forum and type about what their role was. And she did go ahead and lay it out like she had questions for them, and they went in and replied to her questions. So you know that they had gone to do, you know, their research about what their role was as a farmer or a slave or a woman in the 1820s or 1850s. So it was really interesting to see how they shared each other. They also opened the forum up so that the students could ask each other a question about their role, and they can reply to just that student rather to Mrs. Davis's questions. So it was really fun to see them interact, and I think they did a great project. They did a good deal of work on it, and it came alive to them rather than just writing it out on paper. So thank you, Julia. That was a great demonstration.
Yeah,
and it really got me excited.
And part of the reason why it worked was because I've got somebody like Phil Gerner at school, and because I met Bud through this class, because otherwise I wouldn't have gotten past the first step, but because I knew that they could help me if I gave them this idea, and they kind of took it and showed me like the tech pieces that I needed to make it work, and now it's like it's so easy to me. So,
and that kind of leads into the second question, but Kim, did you want to respond to the first question before we move on?
Sure. I just was going to say that Bud has really encouraged me to explore the thin walls idea of connecting my classroom with another classroom of teen parenting students, and I'm trying to figure out how I might connect with another classroom of girls, that we might be able to make a web connection where we could maybe do some projects together, but also just have the support of student to student, that they might be able to realize that, you know, our world is so much bigger, and that they can really make that connection via the web, and who knows, you know, maybe we might be able to do a webcast or something like that too, where they could see each other and talk about each other's babies and where they are in their pregnancy and that type of thing.
Yeah, and maybe they'll do baby blogs or something.
Yeah, so all of that would be really great, and I think it would for our situation, it would also be nice because they would be able to connect with someone that they don't necessarily know as closely as they know their other classmates, and so they might feel more comfortable, you know, discussing, you know, stages of development or, you know, what's going on with their pregnancy, where they feel a little nervous talking about that with somebody that's right across the table mm-hmm. from them. So.
Cool. That's
a great idea.
Yeah. All right, so the second question is kind of what where you guys were heading with concerns, and I say that because you were saying without Phil and without Bud, you might not have been able to carry through. So what kind of concerns do you guys have around Education 2.0 topics or things that keep you from implementing or moving forward?
I don't have any tech issues. I mean, I basically understand everything and how to put it all together. I can even drop storyboard and all that fun stuff to get it all done. The problem with implementing it is I would like to have wireless laptops in my classroom. I don't have the computers I have in my classroom we use for the lab, so they tear them down, put them back together again, tear them down. So we cannot connect to the network because DTS wouldn't like that. These computers are for us to play around with. So the other piece that's missing is the wireless laptop.
You can't use the OCHIS lab for that?
Well, I'm talking about my information technology classes at CDC. And we would have to go to a lab anyways to do the research piece. When you tear down a computer, like I kind of like to give a description in my reflection that one of the labs in class, in the A-plus certification class, has students tear down the computer, take a look at the motherboard, take a look at the serial number or the model number on the motherboard, and then go to the internet, research, find that motherboard on the internet, and then find out the compatible CPU, the compatible RAM, and all that fun stuff. And for students to do that and to continue on with their lab, they would have to, instead of with the laptop, all they have to do is bring the laptop next to them, type it in, get the information they need, and then move on with the rest of the lab. At this point, they have to get up from where they're at in my classroom and go to a computer lab somewhere in the building and then write down all the information on a notebook and then carry that back to the classroom.
So it's access. So it's basically an access issue. We need more stuff.
Yeah, and if with that blog or that online presence as well, they can take that information that they've just researched and then plug it into their blogs or whatever, or the wiki space that they have, and then include information on troubleshooting, because sometimes when you're doing that teardown and stuff like that, you have to troubleshoot problems, and it'd be right there immediate for them.
Is that a problem for others in the group, having just being able to get to computers when you need them?
We've got plenty of computer access, three different computer labs, but I just feel like the computers are slow to do some of the things that we've learned about in class. Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
Is that width band that Bud was talking about when we got here?
So.
Or bandwidth, sorry.
It's all right.
Something like that.
Video and audio always take up. Video most definitely eats up bandwidth. And with me, it's I'm sorry.
It's okay.
With me, besides the laptops, then we also need the wireless connection. The only place that we have it right now in the building is over at Old Columbine, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So,
and they're right next to each other, CDC and Old Columbine.
We're all in the same building. Old Columbine is on the south end, next to administration wing, and then a little bit past that, then the rest of the building is CDC. But only Old Columbine and the administration wing have that access to the wireless.
Well, there is KiteNet, though, that runs down there, so that you can access KiteNet all over town.
Just can't get to it. Students bring in their laptops, their wireless laptops, into my classroom, and they cannot connect to anything. There's nothing there.
That's a bummer. But so in terms of you're feeling like you have access, what other problems come up for folks?
Our labs are often full. That's what I was going to say. I've run it, you know, we have the Mac lab, and I was told recently that I can get access if you guys aren't using the Old Columbine lab, and I didn't know that that was available to teen parenting students, but the Mac lab is being used until I don't know, almost the end of the school year.
Yeah, people sign it up
for the newspaper or something, or yearbook. Something.
Yeah.
And then they've been using the PC lab even for testing and that type of thing. And so it's frustrating when you go to try to sign up and it's booked during, I only have one class period, so that makes it really hard for us.
Well, and really, the stuff that we're talking about requires a lot of research and messing around, like just playing with. Mm-hmm. And so there needs to be, I think there needs to be some sort of creative rights, like, you know, we tried some stuff and maybe it didn't work, but you know, we just need time, like, and we all have this curriculum, I gotta get but really I really need to explore, and I need the space to do that. If I can only get into the computer lab, and I haven't had this problem thankfully this year because Bud got us computers when he was there, but before that, it was like, how, if I have the computers one day a week and I have a 50-minute period and we're spending 15 of those minutes traveling and logging on, or 20 minutes of it traveling and logging on, I get a half an hour that one day a week. It's really just not enough. It's just simply not enough, you know. Any other concerns, or should we move on?
Well, our issues out at Mead are we're on Safari. For our internet browser, and we're on a very different version than the district is on. So when we go to pull up something that's posted, sometimes we don't get the icons. All we get is X's, and it's only because our browser can't read.
Oh, right. Is it old? They just need to update, or
and
it doesn't have the plugins. The browser doesn't have the same plugins.
Same
available.
Plugins. Like, we're on a 1 point something, and the district's on a 3 point something.
Oh.
And they won't update our version right now. So, and our, you know, we have a nice lab. We have 60 computers in our lab, and it's full all the time.
Right.
But our laptops are so old that the batteries are dead. They won't replace the batteries. And, you know, there's no service they can do anymore to the laptops. So we have, you know, maybe four that's running on full memory, and there's not much we can do with those laptops anymore. So, but the browser is my main concern, that, you know, if we're building things, even within the forum, we can see everything clear in Citrix, but then we go to the Mac, to the Safari, and we can't see the icons.
You have to drag.
So that's hard for the students to look at X's. But if you do drag your pointer over the X, then it will say what that icon is, but it won't show you what that icon is.
Well, that's so interesting.
You guys haven't gone to PC. I mean, is it a middle school?
Right, and it's all full Mac.
And it's not, it's all Mac.
All Mac.
And what's interesting is they'll go home, many of them will go home, and they'll have better access than they do at school, which is unfortunate, because what's interesting, too, is I'll ask my students, has anybody ever talked to you guys about, like, internet safety, or nobody's ever had the conversation, and so they're just off at home in their rooms.
You mean, like,
total parents? Yeah, total freedom, and nobody's ever saying, hey, because there's so much stuff out there, I can't even keep up with it, and kids have access to it. Nobody's having conversations with them, at least with my population, yet they have better access at home, but nobody at school to talk to them about it. And it's interesting, too, that the name, Classroom 2.0, and we don't have a classroom set of computers. You know, we have the lab once a week, so.
Right.
Okay, well, what support do you guys think you would need to help you implement ideas or get past some of the barriers, or what kind of support do we need?
I think, like what you said, you know, being allowed to use some of our time in that manner, because I think, you know, you feel guilty, like maybe your administrator might be checking up on you and say, okay, did you cover the things that you're specifically supposed to be covering in curriculum? You know, why are you spending, even I talked with somebody in the lunchroom today that was told, why are you spending your classroom time on computers? And I was surprised, because we're in a career technical ed, you know, building, and I wouldn't expect that, but I guess, you know, with shifting to the Citrix, there's people are needing some training about how to keep students out of grading areas and that type of thing. And not all of our teachers, I'm finding out more and more, there's a lot of different levels. I thought I was kind of at the bottom level of understanding technology and that type of thing, but there's a lot of teachers that can hardly get on their email, and and so I think I think that that's an issue, you know, feeling like it's okay to spend some time trying some new things, and even if you don't come up with this end project that you can show, you know, that's really great, that that's okay, in at least in the initial stages, to kind of, you know, be able to explore some different ideas and see if it works or not.
Other ideas for support needed?
Well, right now I think everybody turns to Bud, and he's only one person.
Yeah.
And I think as, you know, technology changes or catches on, Bud's still only going to be one person. So my worry is that, you know, there's going to be need to be more people in place. But Bud has, you know, great ideas, and he, to me, is the only one that knows how to work it. Like I don't know anybody else that I would go to say, set up virtual campus, you know. And as it does catch on, I know that he's going to be extremely busy.
Maybe more instructional technologists. I think the district only has two, and it's this whole idea of teachers teaching teachers that seems pretty phenomenal. And he's a teacher, so he knows how to get the idea across more than he's a tech person. I mean, he is, but maybe we need more people trained in that. I mean, two people to serve a whole district is pretty crazy.
Right. More in the technology side of, you know, helping us set up, and, you know, rather than that be his role as well. But
I can't remember. It might have been Jim that just posted a bunch of ideas that he got from one thing. And one of them was, like, giving teachers stipends for being able to help with tech stuff in the building. And, you know, like that, I know that Steve McNichols is a history teacher at our school who has a great Moodle account, website, whatever, that his students are actively on every day. He posts online quizzes there and, you know, uses it in like 20 different ways, and he would be a great person to contact. But I would feel, you know, at this point, I wouldn't contact him during the school year and say, you know, can you spend a free period with me?
Right. So you don't want to bother, but if you got a stipend,
if he was getting paid for that, then, you know, that would be something I think would be really worthwhile, because he's a really good source in our school. But, you know, he doesn't need to be teaching, I mean, spending all of his time teaching all of us.
One of the other ideas on that was something about, you know, mandatory training or professional development around technology. Do you guys think that would work?
Mandatory? Within each school, you'd have a lot of people pushing back.
You think so?
Yeah.
But I just think when Kim was talking, there's that gap.
There is a huge gap. Most definitely the people need to be trained in that.
I think if there was a lot of stuff offered and you could choose, you know, what you'd like to learn more about.
And then who's going to do that?
But you just
have to have that available in the district.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
So are you going to implement that in each and every school? And if you do, who's going to do that in each and every school? I mean, is there going to be, like, a person paid, like Jim was saying, but that person is dedicated to that and only that professional development?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, something that this district is kind of like lacking in is funding.
There was a bunch of really great ideas in that too, but, you know, I just think the gap between what some folks could do, then with our students, and you saying that they came on and they just, I'm like, there's a big gap between me and my students, and I'm not anywhere near retiring, and I can imagine, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Get bigger and
it's
bigger.
It's actually kind of scary, I think, to some degree, and it's got to be addressed somehow. So I'm glad that we're all kind of addressing it. But all right, is everybody okay to move on? Does anybody want to add to that? Let's see here. What's the next question?
Discuss how Classroom 2.0 meets the needs of students in today's world, and how will these tools better prepare students?
One, two, three, not it. Nose goes.
Maybe because we don't do much Classroom 2.0 at this point, that we don't have the answers for that right now. But
I'm thinking, and here I am dreaming again and coming up with how it meets the needs of the students in today's world. Well, today's world, students are connected. already. Like you were saying, you've got that huge gap between your own students and your knowledge. Well, they're already using those tools in other ways, the social networks, etc., by implementing those tools in the classroom and having the students go to that online presence. They already know how to talk, they already know how to share information and stuff like that. They're just going to be going to some sort of online presence, and it'll become part of their everyday schoolwork.
Yeah, or maybe they'll be able to, maybe if we can have it at school, we can teach them some methods to approach the technology.
Yes.
So they're not just like, you know, going out there. We can at least teach them how to approach it, how to reflect on it, how to decide what's credible. I mean, all the stuff that we have to do anyway, but you know, and I was reading in one of the articles about it, the 17-year-old kid that's this, I don't know if anybody else saw that, and I'm sorry that I can't remember the name, but the guy started this web entrepreneur, big business, went to Japan at 17 years old or something, and I'm like, that's today's world. You can do that. And if we aren't having conversations with, I mean, what kind of career opportunities are they missing out on if we're not really giving them a space to explore? And then I also think about social networking, that they are writing their identity. Mm-hmm. They are creating, like the Voki, they create an identity every day that my kids at home, my little kids are already on Wii, creating these Wii people. And I'm like, we have to get it. We have to. Yeah. I mean, their resumes, when they're ready for jobs, they're going to be doing this, and they're either going to be doing it with some methodical approach or not, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, with the you were saying, the web presence and the social networking, that's one way of having an online presence. That's not going to work in the work world, though. And there's this complete other world of work that is also online that they'll have to know how to switch between the two.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Well, I think students are going to become really excited in the very near future about the ability to participate and be able to be heard, whether it's online or whether it's collaborating with other students. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that they're going to catch on quickly when they reach that age of maturity that their word is getting out there, you know, that they can go into a wiki and edit it. It's going to be huge that they can say something.
Mm-hmm. And be heard, like you said about your blog. People will read it. You're actually an author if you're a participant in today's world. You're actually an author inherently. If you get online, you are.
I never thought I'd be posting anything online. Never. And to see it up there on the internet.
You got everything, too. You got pictures and...
And I think they don't have so much the fear that we do, or at least I feel, even with my own cell phone, you know, I'm kind of scared to try new things and keep pushing buttons, and my daughter and my son just take to that so easily. They're not afraid that they're going to mess anything up. So I think that's part of why they catch on to some of these things. You know, they can just look through the site, find the buttons and click on it and get going so easily because they don't have that, you know, kind of tentativeness that maybe some of us might feel like, oh, well, we might change something that can't be fixed, or, you know, they don't worry about that so much.
Right.
How about shortcomings? Do you guys see any traps that we need to try to avoid, or do you see anything happening that's a little bit scary in terms of 2.0?
I think, and this has been in a lot of people's forums, is just how to balance the fun of the technology with your curriculum. So to make the technology useful so that it is fitting your curriculum, so you're not just, you know, going off
and whistles.
Yeah, going off and it's like a class of bells and whistles, but they really haven't picked up any of the meat and potatoes. So...
And I think there might be the parent fear factor, too. I mean, I don't think I would find that so much with my students, but I could see it, especially like in middle school or younger, where parents might fear that their kids are going to go places they shouldn't go or get information that they don't want them to have or those kinds of things.
Yeah, and what's okay for the whole world to see about your class and what shouldn't the whole world see and should just stay in a confined space. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's hard, what to share and what not to share. And I think the mind of a young student doesn't know that because life experiences haven't come their way yet.
Right.
And, you know, we guard our privacy. but they don't know their boundaries. You know, they'll put, well, that's how many criminals are caught that are teenagers because they put it on MySpace.
Yeah.
And they don't know what their boundaries are. They don't know that they need to keep life private or pictures private.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that, I think, is huge in kids becoming social networkers. And there's got to be an education to that at a younger age, because they don't have what adults have as far as life experiences. They don't know the repercussions to posting something online.
Did anybody see the Frontline that was about, there was a Frontline that was all about that topic, and it was a bunch of kids went on a drinking fest, and they had, you know, taped it on their phones and they posted it, and one of the mom of the PTO found it and shared it with all the parents, and there was this whole, some of the parents were like, that's none of my business, and some were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. And so it's that whole thing, how do you know, how do you learn that lesson without, you know, it seems like the stakes are pretty high now, you know, stakes are pretty different than they used to be,
right? You know, but I hate to see students learning that lesson the hard way. That there's got to be some education first.
And whose job is it to, whose job is that really? Is it parents' responsibility?
If we're going to open it up to them, is it going to be our job? Yeah.
Well, even on that teacher tube, I saw a video of like kindergartners that were up at a podium talking about why they would be a good president. And I thought, does the teacher have to get the parents okay, because that just went to me. I can see your kindergarten kid. So there's got to be some kind of a release form with something like that. And so does it go from the teacher to the parent, and how does the government follow up on that and know that that video is okay because the parents okayed it? So I just wonder where all that.
Yeah, it seems like kind of a free-for-all right now.
Yeah.
And like just even in terms of music, downloading music, and it just all, everything's sort of chaotic out there. And it's hard to say. I mean, that Jim's thing that talked about differentiating access.
Yeah.
Did you see that where he was like, one, whatever the district was saying that middle schoolers could have a certain level of internet access, high schoolers could have one level, and elementary kids. And that sounds like it might make sense. Although I don't, there's a part of me that says any kind of censorship is bad news. I mean, it's just a tricky, it's a tricky question, a tricky place to be, I think, no matter how you slice it, but...
Yeah, just going off of that, because I teach U.S. history, some of the students were researching the KKK, and all that stuff was blocked.
Yeah.
And
then
we're doing World War II now, Nazi stuff is blocked.
Yeah,
so.
Gothic, I can't, when we want to look up Gothic literature, you can't, you can't get it.
There's ways.
There's backdoor routes, and the kids know them, and I'm learning them too. But it's,
yeah, it's interesting that the kids do know how to get around some stuff.
Came into my classroom looking, trying to look up Prohibition, and he couldn't get it with just that search, and I said, well, come up with a different search parameter, and we try to, you know, name somebody, and then came up with a whole bunch of information that way. So, yeah.
Well, my 16-year-old was taking a teen challenge class, and so it was on drug abuse, and he chose cocaine, and he went into the lab and tried to look up cocaine, and of course everything was blocked, and somebody sitting next to him said, type in cocanos in Spanish. And it came up.
Wow.
But we as a district didn't know that. I mean, maybe the district knew that.
So it doesn't work. The censorship doesn't work anyway. That's interesting.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
So if you type it in Spanish, he got all the information that he needed still in English.
Amazing.
And I've tried to look up some health-related issues for my teen parents that I've been blocked, and the kids can find ways around to...
So what good is the blocking? Like, I wonder how much money they spend trying to block and how effective it really is. It seems like the rules make people, force people to get smarter around how to break the rules. Do you know what I mean? Like, how much investment is there in that process?
Well, I think the Board of Education wants to appease the community by having those rules in place.
But it almost seems like if we just stressed that
they could
teachers...
just hire another instructional technologist. Instead of wasting the money and the effort on
right.
Do you know what I mean?
Because really, if teachers are doing their job, and most computer labs are set up at least something like that, where a teacher can see all the screens at one time, that you should trust that every teacher is a professional and that every teacher is going to be watching their kids and keeping their kids off the wrong sites. But yeah, and so maybe we could save a lot of money and we could raise teacher salaries or something. Did you hear that?
Yes. Okay, so let's see. The last question, I think it's the last question. How do we decide which components of old school to keep and which components of Classroom 2.0 to implement? I kind of want to take a stab at this one. You said something about curriculum, and I wonder if we have to rethink our curriculum. I wonder if that's one of the places we're at educationally. Like, maybe it's time for all of us in different content to think about what are our end goals? What is my English curriculum, you know? Is it important for kids to know the basics of writing an essay, even though they're not going to necessarily probably write essays? They're going to be writing blurbs on a blog. You know what I mean? If that's the practical, I mean, how can it, maybe I need to revise my curriculum. Maybe I need to say an essay looks different than it did 50 years ago. If kids are writing different things than they are now. They're writing more, maybe. I mean, maybe this generation writes more than they ever did, but I need to rethink. I just think there's this delicate balance between, we need to also rethink educationally, which is tricky when we have people that can't access their email hardly. You know, how can we as a whole revise our thinking? But I think it's got to be a little bit, because I think to some degree the kids are teaching us what we have to, what stays and what goes. You know, when they can come in and bypass our, you know, blocks, and when they can come in and figure out how to do stuff, then I think to some degree they're telling us the demand is already there. They're already saying this is what's going to have to happen because this is what we have access to. I don't know. What do you guys think?
We discussed that a little bit in our extra class that we had, and talking about kids writing with like lowercase I and that kind of thing, that's more kind of like text messaging in their writing. And one of the teachers that's an elementary teacher was saying, you know, that scares her to death to think that we would shift completely to that. And yet, like you're saying, how do we know that that's not what it's going to go to? Who's to say?
All you have to do is be in contact with the work world, and the work world still expects people to be literate and to know how to formulate a full sentence, formulate a full paragraph, have a set of ideas, and separate those ideas and everything. That's what the work world is still demanding of the people that we're training, essentially, to be.
So I think it's just important to get both of those balances. And I think, you know, for the kids, that it's very gray. You know, they don't necessarily see that. And I'm constantly correcting papers that are written in text messaging.
Yeah, me too.
It's a handwritten paper. It shouldn't be written in text messaging.
And I'll bet they're getting mixed messages throughout their schooling, because I'm sure there are teachers who are very strict, and I won't take it. If I see a lowercase I, it's going back to you. All the way to teachers who are like, gosh, I'm just happy that you're writing and however you communicate is great. Yeah. And so they're not getting a very clear message probably from their teachers about what to expect as far as writing goes.
Yeah, I think we would see if we talked with different people in the district of wide spectrum of what would be okay. And so I think that is something that definitely needs to be discussed. And we were talking also about how the administrators filter down what's going to be our technology plan for each building, and how that needs to kind of be similar, because as a district, if everyone has their own tech plan, we're going to see a lot of different things. Like Bud was suggesting, if we're going to use Moodle, then maybe we all need to be using Moodle so that we're on the same page as far as that goes. Or you guys probably know better how far that reaches, but he just was saying, you know, that there had been suggested to each principal in each building that needed to be formed, and then that was kind of passed down to whoever is the tech department in your building. But none of us could really say what had happened in our building as far as that had gone. You know, we didn't have any idea. Some of us didn't even know who the tech committee was, so it was interesting to hear. And I guess there was a suggestion made from DTS about what some of those plans should look like, but so far that really hasn't been formulated. So,
but are there's got to be tech standards, right? There's got to be standards for. But I wonder if I wonder about having a standard for each content that had to do with technology. Like, you know, in English we have a standard that's about research skills, and I mean, I think all of them, or many of the English standards, and those are the ones I know about, could lend themselves to technology, but I wonder if there was just one last little blurb that was like, students can blah, blah, blah with a computer, or with Web 2.0, or in history, is it history that you teach? I'm sorry. In social studies, one extra thing is students can use, you know, a computer to, you know, whatever, can access information to figure out, figure out history, or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because you're right, there are there's no technology in our standards.
But you just, that idea of standardizing things. I mean, I'm sort of, there's a part of me that's like, well, if we all said we were going to do this and another better idea, we'd all be screwed because we'd have to stay with
and
the, you know what I mean? That's the problem with it, but it's also a good idea because then at least we're sharing, we have the same language.
That's what Bud was saying, is that he thinks that some people that know what's going on have the fear factor of committing to a certain plan of standards, and then others don't even
know where to begin.
Exactly. I think we can, because we're good with
time. Is it time?
Okay.
Well, I think we're done. Are we done? They're still going. Was there another question,
More. What's next for you as a learner, and where do you go from here?
I'll jump in. For me as a learner, I have I just got a smart board in my room. It's not totally hooked up, and it's been really a lot of fun trying to get our people to figure that one out. But it's there, and I'm hoping that by next year, it's only been there since June. But anyway, I'm hoping that it'll be working, and I'd like to be able to. I think that having that front where I can show kids what, I mean, I have Moodle classes that I've built. I'm running a couple already, but I started one for English 9 next year, and I think I want to do scribe post. I want to just be able to use that smart board to help kids see what I'm asking them to do more. So that's my next learning venture.
Phil Gerner's doing tech classes. He's our librarian. He's doing some tech classes for teachers and students during the school day, you know, like second period once a week or something like that.
People from different schools.
And so he's just getting his posters out, whatever, and I would never have even looked twice at these posters a year ago, but now after getting excited about some of these things, I'm gonna try to make it to some of his things and see what extra stuff he can inspire me to do. So
For me as a learner, I'm gonna keep digging in. I'm gonna keep with the OPD classes that are offered within the district, and keep introducing the staff to different technology that comes my way. So
I think I'd do the same. Not so sure about the offerings of professional development, but most definitely I stick my nose to the grindstones, so to say. I'm always researching on the internet for new information, more information and stuff. It's just getting the stuff from the internet to paper, writing it all out, and then actually creating something, having something done and created, and then present it to the students and have them work with it. So that's what I need to do. Just sit down, create it, use the best tools available, and then have a way to present it to the students. Hopefully, next year.
I think I just need time to experiment some more on my own, just because I feel like I'm at the bottom of the learning curve with this class, but it's nice to have other teachers from our building that I can bounce things off of and feel like I can get some help with some things. And then, like we said, we don't want to overwhelm Bud, but it is nice to know that he's out there, that he can, help us if we get stuck with something.
And that's another thing, too, for me. I don't know what my job will be next year, if I'll continue on with the tech rep position as well. But as that person, and I have been thinking about it only this week, I don't know why I hadn't done it earlier, but I should probably create a course or two, make some professional development opportunities available to people in the school, staff in the school, and get you guys trained on a couple of things.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be really
wonderful.
Helpful.
Mm-hmm. Would be. And there's a lot of different, it could be similar to this class where there's
right.
a lot of expertise that folks might know and they could just share with other
right.
folks, you know.
And I think this class has been nice. Two of my paras have taken a class in the district that was on Excel, and they said that they felt like they were at the bottom of the learning curve, that a lot of secretaries took it that already knew quite a bit about Excel, mm-hmm. and they said they were behind the whole time, and they felt so discouraged. And I haven't felt as much that way. You know, I felt a little timid about jumping out and doing some things, but I didn't feel like I was, you know, cut down or put down mm-hmm. For not knowing as much as some of the other people in the class. And I think that's really important, especially mm-hmm. when we're kind of all thrown into one learning environment, that everybody feels welcome to ask questions. And
yeah, and the cool thing about this content is there's so much out there that nobody can, except for Bud, can really be an expert on any of it. You know what I mean? So we're all
yeah.
just teaching each other, mm-hmm. which is
right.
kind of a cool
right.
backbone for professional development, I think. Yeah. Does anybody have last comments before we wrap up?
Thank you, Bud.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a great class.
It's